Hi, I'm Dave McCrae from the Lowy Institute, and I'm joined today by Killian Nolim from the Institute for the Policy Analysis of Conflict in Jakarta. He's just spoken at the Indonesia Mini Update, co-hosted by the Lowy Institute and the ANU Indonesia Project, and he spoke on Papua. Killian, welcome.
Thanks, good to be here.
Now, one of the big things that we look at when we look at decentralization in Indonesia is Pamekaran, the division of districts and provinces into new and more regions. Now, how has this process played out in Papua, and what have been its effects?
I think Pamekaran in Papua has sort of been the extreme case in Indonesia, in part because the number of districts that have been created. We've gone from a situation in 1999 where there were 10 districts in just one province, that was Irian Jaya, to a situation today where we have two provinces, Papua and now Papua Barat as well, and 40 Kabupaten and Kota together at local level. So in terms of number, that's just been extreme. I think also in terms of if Pamekaran across the country has sometimes thrown up local administrations dealing with sort of weaker institutions around them in a way that can sometimes lead to conflict, that's been an issue in Papua. That's one reason why I think one of the impacts we've seen and which we outlined in the presentation in Papua has been more local conflict, especially around election time.
Okay, and what sort of conflicts are you seeing as a result of Pamekaran?
A lot of that conflict has to do with sort of around elections. It has to do with weak local elections commissions, sometimes difficult to staff, sometimes elections commissions where it's been necessary to remove staff because of fraud allegations or something like that. In some of those districts, you've had disputes then over whether we should use the current local elections commission or the old local elections commission. In other areas, you've had questions over sort of the voter rolls has been a big issue across Papua. We've seen a really dramatic spike in some of those voter rolls, including at provincial level. And I think it's not clear exactly whose job it is to try to make sure those rolls are clean and that they make sense. The best example of that was probably going into the January 2013 election, the governor's election, when the voter roll essentially equaled the 2010 census population of the entire province. So in that sort of weak institutional framework, I think you then have quite a few of those local elections turning violent.
Yeah. Now, we see violence elsewhere in elections in Indonesia, but generally not deadly. But some of the violence in Papua, I think it's in Kabupaten Puncak in particular, a really violent conflict around an election. Now, why do you think that is, that there's more violent, more deadly conflict in elections in Papua?
This violence, which often arises from administrative things, but things like sort of one of the candidates being blocked from running for election, it tends to turn particularly violent when it also happens to map on top of existing clan divisions. And I think that's what we saw in the Puncak case, where one of the excluded candidates sort of called on different members of the community to fight against one another. One of his opponents called on the OPM to get involved as well. And that helped drive the fighting over the course of more than a year. And killed over 50 people. So I think that's when things tend to seem the most explosive, I think, is when there's also existing clan tensions that can be mobilized around that election. The other problem is that we actually have, in a lot of these new Kabupaten, a relatively limited police force. So the police are often not prepared for conditions up in the highlands where they're often quite remote, isolated from both other police, but also from their families. And in many areas, we see there just haven't actually been the police facilities. The police infrastructure has not kept a pace with Pamekaran. So in some of those areas where the election violence has occurred, there isn't actually a poll res or a district level police station in force yet. And that means police have to come in. They're not so familiar with the conflict and they have trouble controlling it.
Okay. Now, one of the things that for me was really interesting that you talked about earlier was this knock-in system in elections in Papua where you don't have individual voters punching their ballot. So could you talk us through that and why that, what role that plays in elections in Papua?
Yeah, the knock-in system has been relatively controversial in Papua. It's sort of, there's a debate about the exact history of it, but it's something that's used in the highlands and is defended by a number of highlander politicians in particular as part of the cultural practice of the highlands. And when we're talking about the knock-in system, it's named for the knock-in bag, which is a bag carved out of bark that's used widely in the highlands for everyday tasks such as carrying goods or even carrying your child, for example, on your back. But the knock-in system, when we talk about elections, is, again, it seems to vary in different areas, but it can sometimes involve placing ballots in knock-in bags. Sometimes it involves actual people in the village standing up with each of them with one bag around their neck and people voting in different ways. But across the board, it seems to involve not punching a ballot, as you do everywhere else in Indonesia, with an individual choice, and also voting publicly so that everyone can see. And that's important because in many communities that use the NOKEN system, there's also community agreement before the poll on exactly how people are going to vote. And one of the best areas sort of examine how this works in different places is to look at the testimony before the Constitutional Court, because a lot of losing candidates have challenged the outcome of elections based on the NOKEN system and said this isn't exactly legal. So what's interesting actually is going into the January 2013 governor's poll, the Papua Provincial Elections Commission put out some very, very brief and relatively vague guidelines on sort of what NOKEN system voting would be, but they sort of distanced themselves from it at the same time. They said this is something that it's an allowed way of voting, but it's not something the voting election officials are going to administer themselves. It's something that I think the phrase they used was kelompok masyarakat, so community groups would sort of have to arrange on their own and then hand over to election officials to sort of be translated into actual votes.
So you talk about elections in Papua. We're seeing significant violence in some of the elections, controversy over this NOKEN system. What sort of reforms do you think are needed to local elections there?
One of the proposals that's floating around nationally is the idea of ending direct local elections for local officials. And I think rather than do that, what would be easier is just to try to improve, or sort of more effective would be to improve enforcement of the existing regulations that we have, the existing structures that we have. So that means efforts to clean up voter lists and make sure, for example, that people who have died or people who have moved, you know, there's obviously a lot of migration within the province, people moving to Jayapura in particular, that those people's electoral records are cleaned up so they only exist in one place rather than in both. Trying to gather more accurate population figures. We've seen a real divergence between census figures and the figures held by Home Affairs and others. Stepped up oversight of the provincial and local elections commissions. I think they have a difficult job, but I think they also probably need a little bit more coordination with higher levels. We think getting rid of the NOKEN system and the understanding that it's in conflict with existing national election law. And then just generally, I think trying to enforce the criteria for Pemekaran so that we don't see more and more kabupaten being set up in a sort of weak institutional environment, instead trying to sort of strengthen the existing structure that we have right now.
I mean, on Pemekaran, you say Papua is an extreme case. You're getting more Pemekaran there than elsewhere in Indonesia. I mean, is it realistic to expect that you'd be able to slow or stop that? And I mean, what is driving this Pemekaran that we're seeing?
I think part of it is that the incentives, the financial incentives for creating kabupaten are higher in Papua than elsewhere. And that's mainly because Papua receives so much more money than the rest of the country does in terms of per capita basis, much higher general allocations. There's the special autonomy money in particular. And each of these new kabupatens, because most of that money flows down to kabupaten level, they're getting more. In fact, the current governor, Lukas Nmembe, has a plan to try to change the distribution of OTSUS funds, that's special autonomy funds, which is right now 60% to the kabupaten, 40% to the province, to actually 80% to the kabupaten. So you can see there's just a lot of money there. I think that's part of it. Many of the new kabupaten that are being created are also a result of, I think, moves by clans or suku to sort of gain status and have their own unit of government. So many of these older kabupaten that we had, either in 1999 or in some of the first waves, are being broken down once more because within along existing suku divisions within them.
Now, you focus in your paper on these Pemekaran conflicts. A lot of people would be more familiar in press reportage of violence between independence movement and the security forces. Now, when you look at overall violence in Papua, how significant are the different forms of violence relative to each other?
Separatist conflict, actually, while it is what we hear about outside of the province and particularly what people outside the country hear about the most, is actually relatively limited, is responsible for a relatively limited amount of the conflict or incidents of conflict that we see in Papua. Much bigger drivers of violence are domestic violence in particular, but also sort of violence at community level that's often a response to ineffective governance. So it means groups fighting with one another where there's no sort of police response, groups fighting with the state in certain ways, sort of revenge against local officials who either aren't doing their jobs or are doing their jobs ineffectively. And I think separatist conflict is actually a much smaller part of that. So while it does get a lot of the news, we actually need a much more, when we're looking to reduce violent conflict in Papua, which is sort of one of the most violent provinces in Indonesia, we need to look at a much more comprehensive strategy. Part of that means trying to sort of increase the amount and the quality of the policing that exists in Papua. But I think it's also about strengthening local governance. And that's another reason to be concerned that Pemekaran is sort of running away out of control in Papua on some level, because there's a need to strengthen the government structures that already exist before we create new ones.
Yeah. Finally, going back to the separatist conflict, again, you mentioned because of Pamukkale and because of decentralization, there are just so many more elected officials in Papua now. Does that bear any implication for the separatist conflict itself?
That could be one of the more interesting sort of influences of the largely increased political class in Papua that's come as a result of Pamukkale. Because we have so many more Kabupaten, we have so many more local officials who have been elected by the people. And I think that's one thing that we hope could play a more constructive role in efforts to sort of have some kind of either dialogue, as it's sometimes called, or sometimes the government prefers constructive communication between Jakarta and officials in Papua. So looking at ways to improve the implementation of the 2001 Special Autonomy Law, which gives some special powers to the Papua provincial government and Kabupatens, looking at ways to ensure that the money that's going to Papua is spent effectively in a way that's sort of delivering for the people, and just looking to reduce tensions overall.
Killian Nolan, thank you.
Thank you.